Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all the way to Norway and Sweden. And so I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use it to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and subscribe wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. The show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, and the Google Play Music app available on Android. Again, subscribe to the show and leave us a rating and review to let us know how we're doing. On the show are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters and authors who are doing amazing things in the world and are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any guest that I bring on the show, this is a live show. If you're catching us at 11 a.m. Eastern time, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109, and a team is standing by to field your questions. And with that, please help me welcome to the show, Pete Evick. How's it going, Pete? Welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
I'm doing great, Sean. Thank you for having me on, man. How are you?
I'm doing amazing, and I'm super pumped to have you on the show today for many reasons, but you're an entrepreneur, you're a published author, and you're a heck of a musician. So I cannot wait to dive into all of that and get into your story and just get to know more about you, man. So if you're ready, let's do this.
Always ready. Let's go.
So the title of this episode is The Moments That Make Us with Pete Evick. Father, entrepreneur, producer, songwriter, published author, and musician, all-around rock star, founder of Soul Candle Company, Pete is proud of his roots here in Manassas and is generous with his time to support the business community. Pete is a Virginia boy at heart and with tight, strong ties to his hometown of Manassas. He is a multi-talented musician and producer who, in addition to playing guitar in the Bret Michaels Band, has also served as a co-songwriter, producer, mixer, musical director for the group, and his own band, Evick. A man with a true entrepreneurial spirit, he pursues his own projects, which have included the conception of an all-digital record company called Potomac Records. Is that correct, Potomac?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Potomac Records, which has been turned over to his close high school friend, Mike Bailey, and a new environmentally conscious candle company, also based in Virginia, called Shining Soul Candle Company. Pete is also a published author. His book, The Moments That Make Us, can be found on Amazon or be purchased in their retail store in Center Street, Manassas. Although Pete is an award-winning producer, his biggest role in life remains that of being the best father he can to his two boys. Inside of the show notes right there is The Moments That Make Us on Amazon. Click that, buy that, and show the world the moments that make you. Go to Shining Soul Candle Company and check out Shining Soul, S-O-L, shiningsoul.com, and check out his candle company and then connect with them on Facebook, on Instagram, and inside of the show notes is an April 2019 Guitar World magazine article. You can read up more about the amazing, amazing Pete Evick. So with that said, I got to know, man, you do so many cool things. I got to know, what is your why? What is your deep why for what it is that you do?
So why am I a musician, or why am I an entrepreneur, or why is it so right? important for me to inspire other people?
So you could go any way you want. I love the fact that you're an entrepreneur, but you also chose music. You can go any way you want. You know, what is your why for being an entrepreneur, and what made you, you know, build the Shining Soul Kennel Company? And then, you know, what is your why for being a musician, and why did you publish the book?
So I get awfully talky. I hope you're ready for this. But I think that I would start when I was about, you know, at 5 years old, my mother put a guitar in my hand. And I didn't quite understand it. She was a huge Elvis fan. And then that was, you know, in 1975 or six. And then I couldn't grasp on to what she wanted from me. But about that time was when I saw Kiss. I was a little kid. And so Kiss were like superheroes and Godzillas and stuff. So there was something in the music industry that a kid could hold on to. So I got into rock and roll was that. But what I would say is I'm going to change a little bit of the name and the story, because I'm going to tell you something about someone I consider a close friend of mine, but I don't think they like this story, but the story is important and I rarely tell it. And I was actually at a funeral a couple weeks ago talking about the story and realized how this is one of the why moments in my life. So I'm going to tell this on your show basically for the first time, but it wraps up into being an entrepreneur and an inspirational speaker and a musician all in one. Is I was about 18 years old, striving to be a musician, wanting to be, you know, the rock star and wanting to be successful like everybody. And there was a guy that lived in our town who had joined a real, real famous band, and everyone thought he'd made it. Everyone thought that everything was great. He was the guy. He was the guy in town that if he didn't make it, no one was going to make it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And as far as I knew, he was still in this very successful band out touring, and I had some food delivered to my house one day, and he delivered it.
Wow.
And at that very moment, I basically it was like a adrenaline bolt that has never come down. I have been full of anxiety since that very moment. I was about 18, 19 years old. And what I thought was, I remember thinking, holy crap, I got to get this together and work much harder than anyone I know thinks you have to work to do this. Because we all thought he was the guy that was going to do it. Does this story make sense?
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not putting down the food industry. I'm not putting down delivery industry. I'm not saying anything bad about that. If you want to be a pizza delivery guy, be the best pizza delivery guy in the world. But this guy did not want that, but it's what he had to do. And it frightened me. And from that single day on, the why I do what I do is, if anyone is to know me, they know that I'm always filled with anxiety, but it's not negative anxiety. I'm always filled with a energy to rush to do it now. My new statement that I'm using a lot. My new statement that I'm using a lot these days is, my starting line is what most people think the finish line is. So and I get that because especially in the music industry, a lot of people think you get your record deal and you've made it and you're great. That's not true. When you get a record deal, basically that's someone saying, we're finally going to let you into the party. We're letting you in. Now it's up to you to be able to stay here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that's total sense.
And I treat my life like that. I remember when I got in Brett's band, I didn't go, oh, I made it, I'm finally here, I meant the big time with a rock and roll legend singer. No, I wanted to know what else I could do, how I could embed myself in his industry, how I could help him. Not that he needs help, but, you know, and then with Shining Soul, the same thing. We've had all these very small goals, and a lot of people, you know, around us are like, oh, that's great. You got the business of the year. Oh, that's great. You got, you know, gift shop of the year. And I see a lot of people slow down when that stuff happens. And to me, whenever I get an accolade or an award, all of a sudden I go, holy crap, I better get that again next year, or else it was just a lie. And, you know,
yeah.
And so that's my why. I think my why right now in life is to not be a failure to my children and to inspire them that at all costs, all their dreams can come true, no matter how strange a path is. That's why I do everything I do right now. But that has changed in my life over the years. There's different reasons.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the title of the book, by the way, The Moments That Make Us. How did you come up with that title? That I think that is an amazing title for a book. Because if you think about it, you know, there's a saying out there. I don't know who said it, but there's a saying that says life is not measured by the number of breaths we take or the amount of possessions that we have, but it's by the moments that take our breath away. And I keep that in my mind all the time. You know, so talk about that.
So originally, the book was actually called Kids Are Resilient, But What About the Adults We Become? Because I was writing the book as an inspiration to my children because of my divorce, my family breaking up. And and one of the biggest pet peeves, and it irks me, my skin crawls when people say kids are resilient, because maybe that is the case, but every adult I know is now screwed up or claims to be screwed up. The world of antidepressant drugs and everything is the biggest business that, you know, and it's like, yeah, you haven't considered what the future holds. The kid may seem like he's okay. He may show up to dinner at 5 o'clock and play baseball and soccer and do all these things. But what really, really has happened to the kid shows up 20, 30 years later in his own marriage, in her own relationships. And so the book was called The Kids Are Resilient, But What About the Adults We Become? And I was writing this book for about a year, and I had a publisher and an editor with me, and everything was fine. And then one day the editor said to me, this book has become something different. It's an inspirational book. It's not a book about divorce anymore. And I didn't realize that, but the stories had done different things. And so I started thinking about it, and I realized as much of the book that I had written had been about single moments. Every one of those chapters, the entire chapter is defined by a split second in my life. You know, you know, every chapter is an aha moment that happened in a blink of an eye. And so it became a moment, the moments that make us. And it, one day it just hit me like a ton of bricks that that's the name of the book. And there it is.
Oh, I love that. That's absolutely amazing. And as a resilience trainer and expert, I definitely 100% agree with everything you just said there. So my mom and dad got divorced when I was in first grade, kindergarten into first grade. He joined the military, and my mom gave him an ultimatum. If you leave, I won't be here when you get back. He said, but this is something I have to do. I have to join the military. So you have three kids. You're not joining the military. Well, he joined the military, and then the Gulf War broke out. So he's gone a lot. My mom's like, screw this, I'm out. So they got divorced. What transpired over the next 6 or 7 years was ridiculous. Like, you know, physical abuse and drugs and alcohol in the home. And it was just, you know, domestic violence. Like, it was bad. And so
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And
thank you to your father for the service, though. That is the most important thing that anyone can offer, is their sacrifice for our country. So thank you to him.
And because of that, I joined the military, you know, and because my
thank
grandfather
you.
Was in the, both of my grandfathers were in the Korean War. My brother-in-law, you know, was a Marine. My dad was in the military. My uncle, like, it just like everybody like was in the military, you know? So I just, I look at it. I'm like, well, this is just kind of like what our family does, you know, entrepreneurs, military, cool. Got it. But when I got married the first time, it was, I'm in the military and I'm drinking a lot and I'm living a party lifestyle because I'm traveling all over the world and like, you know, but it wasn't modeled for me what a marriage looks like. I looked at my aunts and uncles and I looked at my grandparents and I was like, Bob, that's what they do. Like, that's what's supposed to happen. But I didn't have somebody modeling for me what a marriage looked like. And so in that first year of marriage, it was all kinds of issues, ended up getting divorced. I mean, it's like nothing to model it. You know, I thought it was supposed to be one way in my mind, and I didn't have anything to go against that. So
right.
I definitely,
absolutely,
definitely believe what you were saying about how about the adults, because none of that really affected me on that level until I became an adult and I got into that. And then it started coming back up.
And I got to be honest with you, I've never discussed this with someone that is an expert like you on the topic. So to get that validation from you that I was at least on target, that makes my day today. I appreciate you you telling me that, you know. So and thank you for your service on the military, buddy, so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you so much. So talk about a transformational moment. I mean, I'm not sure if when you were talking about your why, if that was the transformational moment, but I believe that pain is never wasted. I also believe that what you're going through or what you've gone through is preparing you for where you're going to. So can you talk a little bit about a transformational moment? Maybe it was your mom putting a guitar in your hand and now you're, you know, the guitarist for Bret Michaels' band. You know, you love entrepreneurship so much that you've created these multiple businesses and the author and everything. What was a transformational moment or two in your life that put you on the path to what you're doing today?
Yeah, so there's several, actually. So can I just have several moments?
Absolutely.
Is that all right?
Absolutely.
So as a kid and a musician, you know, the transformation to really get on that path is exactly basically the same as the why, which makes me realize that I need to rephrase the why. I cut and simple, I do what I do now. The why is because early on in my life, I realized that playing music takes people on a journey. If they're having a bad day,
mm-hmm.
I can help them escape that. Even if I'm having the worst day of my life, I can make someone else's life a little happier. That's a really, really important feeling. And at one point in my book, I said, that's a gift you're given. And if you're given that gift and don't use it, that's like the ultimate sin to me, because there's not a lot of happiness in the world these days. It's really, really hard to find pure, innocent joy. And if I was given the gift to be able to take 5 minutes of pain away from someone while they sing a song or hum along to a guitar solo, I better do that or else so why I do everything I do is a honest to God passion to, just a passion to make life better to other people, just the whole world. If you affect one person with some kind of happiness, maybe it'll affect a second. You know, negativity breeds negativity pretty fast. Happiness is supposed to breed happiness, but it doesn't seem to come as quick. but playing music and making someone smile, it's selfishly a really good feeling. But once you get past your own ego, it's also very divine. It's a gift, man. It's a power. And I think that's why I do it, because I've seen people smile and people have come up to me and told me, you know, that what I do makes them happy. And you know, that guy sounds so arrogant saying that. So I hate even saying it, but you get it. So the moments that the transformational moments would be, I would say, geez, it's really hard to think about the transformational moments. I would say that the first night that I ever got on stage with Bret Michaels, I had been playing four sets of live music a night, seven nights a week, all over the country in my own band, cover band stuff, whatever it took to pay the bills, and very active and very energetic. I've never been a standstill on the stage guy, but I could do four sets nonstop. And then I got on stage with Brett for 45 minutes, and I remember feeling like I got knocked over when it was over. I'm not a sports guy, but I remember feeling like I'd played a football game. And it occurred to me that it factor that some people have that other people don't, which Brett obviously has, is an energy. It's not image. It's not talent. It's an energy. It's a shockwave. And I thought that I had it, and I found out maybe you have to hone it. And so that first night I was with Brett on stage was a transformation moment, because I said that at that moment I went, oh, this is how this really is done. This is the difference between a club band and a rock star. And I changed how I did everything that moment.
Wow. I think that's okay. So first of all, let me just say that I think it's super badass. Like, super cool that you get to play on stage with Bret Michaels. I was born in 83. So what I listened to was I listened to Kissing Queen. That was like my band. Like, I loved Kissing Queen,
right,
and Bon Jovi. So
oh,
those
yeah.
three. It was always Bon Jovi. And by the way, with Bon Jovi, 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit has to be their best album. Just saying. Some people disagree, but. Amazing album.
That was before you were born. That was before you were born, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But
Tokyo,
I remember.
Tokyo Road.
But
Tokyo. Yep. Tokyo Road. Silent Night. In and Out of Love.
In and Out of Love.
All,
yep.
All great, great, great,
great
music.
Great music.
A little lyrically, the John we know today would not sing those lyrics. He's all grown up, and those are a little too tongue in cheek for him. But but what great songs?
Yep.
What great songs and great fun at the time.
But I remember, like, because we think of these eras, right? The greatest era, I think, the greatest era for rock had to have been the 80s hair bands. You know, some of the greatest music in I don't know, just what I think, you know, as far as music, was absolutely amazing. I just think it's so amazing that you get to hang out and play for a guy that, like, I literally grew up listening to, you know, in Poison, you know? And so... For me, this
is
super cool.
That story, let me take that story a little bit different, or let me push that envelope a little bit more for you.
Sure.
So most people in my position that get a gig with a guy like that, they're a hired guitar player that's just looking for work, if that makes sense. And they're not really, some of them aren't incredibly as passionate, and they go from band to band. As a better gig, so to speak, comes up. In my ninth grade talent show, I played a Poison song. And when CC DeVille left Poison in 1992, I made every phone. I was 17 years old, I was 18 years old. I made every call I could. I did everything I could to try to get in Poison. I was far too young. But so I loved them. So when I got this gig, it wasn't just a paying gig. This was cool to me. This was... You know, and I've been here 17 years. A lot of people don't keep a sideman gig for 17 years. And, you know,
That's cool.
it's super, super cool to stand on stage and
yeah.
look at a guy that's basically one of the best friends I've ever had in my entire life. But still, sometimes I look over during every rose and I turn, you know, 16 again.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay, first of all, that song is powerful. That is an amazing, holy crap, amazing song. So I want to take this opportunity, right, and just kind of just ask you. So you're the guitar player. You're the guy, right? So when we talk about guitar players, right? I mean, who comes to mind? Because everybody says Jimi Hendrix is the best. Or Eric Clapton, or Jimmy Page, you know, even Keith Richard, Eddie Van Halen. You know, I just, for me, St- Steve Vai just stands out as an amazing guitar player. Joe Satriani, Brian May. I mean, Brian May built his own guitar and played his own. Like, come on now. Like, you know, so, you know, I think you're amazing too. But I mean, if you had to think, like, who comes to mind in it, because you're in it, you're in the world. Who comes to mind as, like, the top guitar player? Who's the best?
So that question is definitive by time and genre. There's no real answer to that question. That's a fact.
I agree.
But from the moment and the era that I was born into and the time I was born into, you know, for me, it's always hands down going to be Edward Van Halen. I have a huge Van Halen tattoo on my forearm. Anybody that knows me knows that I live and die for the Van Halen stuff. It's a way of life to me. It's a crusade. It's you know, it's one of my missions is to make sure that if you haven't heard Van Halen, you hear it. But with that being said, I am in that strange percentile that prefers the Sammy Hagar stuff over the David Lee Roth stuff. You know, I was in middle school in 1986 when Hagar joined the band, but I'd been playing guitar since I was 5 years old. And the interesting thing that I had a lot of much, much older friends that were already guitar players. And the thing about Van Halen that I remember that is very specific to my age and my genre was only three times, I would say, in the entire industry, in the music industry, did overnight everybody had to relearn everything they knew. And what's interesting to me, that was obviously with Jimi Hendrix before I was born was the first time that happened as a guitar player. Okay, so next time was Edward Van Halen. And the interesting thing to me was I started playing guitar at 4 years old, and by 1978, I was into Van Halen. I started playing when I was five. I was into Van Halen, and I just started playing that stuff. So most of my friends that were older than me and most of the adult guitar players have these stories about how they had to relearn how to play their guitar. They had to learn everything was different overnight. But all those people it was happening to, I was just playing the Van Halen stuff because it was all I knew. I didn't know the old stuff, you know? So to me, I'm not saying it came easy because it's incredibly intricate, but it's what I knew. I have a harder time playing the Guns N' Roses stuff, who Slash is another iconic guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
He's amazing.
Oh, 100%.
But for the most part, he doesn't do any of that kind of mind-blowing wizardry that Edward does. But I can't do it. I can't do that Guns N' Roses stuff to save my life, but I can do the Van Halen stuff. It's weird how that stuff affects you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, moving forward, you know, Steve Vai, you mentioned Vai. When Vai came out with Roth on the Eat 'Em and Smile record, there was a brief moment in my life where I thought, holy crap, Roth is going to win this little thing because this is the baddest record I've ever heard in my entire life. And Yankee Rose was the most amazing song I'd ever heard. And holy crap, there is another guitar player that's better than Edward Van Halen. How did this happen? Like, my mind, I panicked. I couldn't understand what was happening. I couldn't understand what was
That's
happening.
So awesome.
To this day,
That's awesome.
to this day, I will, you know, every few months or so, I'll go on YouTube and just dig up Vi videos myself. So it's interesting that you like him a lot, and I'll watch.
I do.
And he's so fluent. The guitar is a part of him. But interestingly enough, just like Edward Van Halen, there's a handful of people that can't stand him. And I hate to say that, but it's divided down the middle. There's your guys that, you know, they like certain things, and Steve plays like himself. And if it's an acquired taste, if you don't like it, you don't get it. And then the third time that history was changed, I was alive for, and that was Dimebag from Pantera. I'm not a huge, huge super metal guy, but I remember hearing that I remember hearing that and feeling exactly the way all my older friends felt when they heard Van Halen. I remember going,
yep,
holy crap, I have to go home and start all over again. I have to figure out what this guy's doing because this is the way,
yep,
of the future. And sure enough, it was. He paved the path for, you know, now, you know, he paved the path that was mind-blowing. But if you step back,
sure,
to that, his influences were Metallica. I'm not particularly influenced by Metallica, but I will tell you that I saw Metallica in 1986 when Cliff Burton was still alive, and they were opening for Ozzy,
mm-hmm,
Osbourne on the Master Puppets tour, and that was the only other time in my life that I felt that energy that I was talking to you about, Brett. Even though I was a kid in the audience about, you know, 45 rows back, I felt knocked over by a freight train. And even though I didn't love metal, I remember going, holy crap, how can I make someone feel like their face just get ripped off with their guitar? And Dimebag took that to a different level. So to me, you have Jimi Hendrix, Edward Van Halen, and Dimebag Darrell are the definitive innovators of my lifetime.
I love it. So, you know, thank you for sharing. I'm a huge, you know, Van Halen fan. I remember when I was literally in middle school going into high school when I got turned on to Pantera and then Gwar and then, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, whoa, you know, like I get that feeling. It was like, whoa, what is this? You know, so very, very cool. I want to talk about. Yeah, go ahead.
I always make this one joke though about Dimebag and me. We weren't too far off on age, and his two favorite bands were Kiss and Van Halen, just like mine. They're my two favorite bands. But
I
like the Paul Stanley stuff, and I like the,
yep,
Sammy Hagar stuff, and,
yep,
Daryl like the Gene Simmons stuff and the Roth stuff. And so I always laugh that we had the same influences, but I like the wrong songs.
I like the Gene Simmons stuff too. My aunt, who passed away in 2004, she is the one who brought me up with Kiss and Queen. And she was a huge, like the Kiss army. I mean, she was, I remember literally dressing up year after year as different Kiss characters, like for 4 years straight. And she did all my face. She knew the lineage. Like she would know, like, well, actually Ace Frehley left and then it was Bruce Kulick, and then Bruce Kulick left and he was the Egyptian warrior. And then Catman, you know, what was his name? Peter Chris. He left, and then it was this other guy, you know, Eric Carr. And then this guy, like, she knew she was the Kiss fanatic, you know? And so she had every album.
If you're a true Kiss fanatic, then you are that. I know every record, the year every record came out. I know who produced
yep.
it, you know, and in our candle company in Shining Soul, one of the first things we did was I licensed the usage of the Kiss catalog. So we actually have the rights to put officially licensed Kiss candles out, and we have each of their album covers on a candle.
That's cool. So let's talk about that for a couple of minutes before we start to close the show, because we're coming up on time. Let's talk about that. Talk about creating Shining Soul Candle Company, how you got the idea. Kind of just talk about that.
So, I've told the story a few times, and I think that you particularly will find this kind of interesting. We seem to be on the same wavelength about a lot of things. I'd been on tour for 9 months. I think I'd been home 3 days in that 9 months, and I had gone through a divorce, and I came home to basically an empty house. Let me clarify this. The divorce is fine. Me and my ex-wife are great. It wasn't evil. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't nasty. It was just two people that went different places. So it wasn't dark, but I came,
sure.
I kept the house and I came home to an empty house. Every time I tell that story, it sounds so dark, and it wasn't meant to be that way. But anyway, I, 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 I can't, I came home off tour, and it was the first time in a decade that I lived by myself. Let's put it that way. And I was exhausted, and I was tired. I was contemplating, do I really want to continue to do this? Because the bottom line is, in the music industry, if you decide to be in the music industry and do it for real, you sacrifice everything else. If you're really going to be a professional, and this is where most people can't do it, you perform on holidays, and you miss birthdays, and you miss weddings, and you miss funerals, and you go to the show, and you show up, and you do your job, and entertainment, you're the entertainer. You're not the entertained. So it becomes, when your mind starts to realize what's really happening, it can really wear you down, because for the last 9 months, I made sure everybody else was happy, but what did I do? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So anyway,
absolutely.
I was sitting at home alone, and I had had this fake stone fireplace custom made in my home that was more of an entertainment center that looked like a fireplace, but it wasn't a real fireplace. In Arizona, it's really trendy to burn candles in your fireplace. And because of the wildfires and the dry heat, they don't start real fires out there. So I had this fireplace built, and then I went to the biggest candle company in the entire world, and I went and bought a candle that was supposed to smell like a burning fireplace. And
okay.
I lit it, and it didn't really smell like a burning fireplace to me. It didn't smell enough. It didn't fill my room. These days, I know that it's called scent throw. It's Ed Gordon. I didn't know that then.
Yep.
But anyway, I went the next day and bought two more of them and thought if I lit three, it would help. And it still didn't satisfy me. And I was sitting in the dark, staring at these candles, just relaxing, which was new to me. I'd never been an unwind guy in my life. From 18 years old to in my 40s, it was, as I said in the beginning of this interview, die-hard panic to get to the finish line that I didn't know what the finish line was. So I tricked myself into relaxing, putting music behind me for a few days, and I was sitting on my couch in the dark. And I went, man, I've never in my life done anything but play my guitar. I've never had a hobby. I wonder if I can make one of these candles. And so I went the next day to the hobby store. And then the obsessive personality in me took over.
Yep.
And 3 months later, I lifted my head up and realized 3 months had gone by, and I had turned my kitchen into a lab, and I had learned everything you could possibly learn about candles and the candle industry. And I thought to myself, well, then I found out that Yankee Candle alone that year had done $2.4 billion. That's a lot of money.
Wow.
Nobody in the music industry makes billions anymore. That doesn't exist. So, and I've never been a money guy. I've never, like, I always make this kind of joke that I made the deal with the devil. You know that whole thing that you make the deal with the devil in the rock and roll business and you sell your soul.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I feel that because I've never gotten super ahead financially. Like, I'm not swimming in money at all. But all I always said was, I don't want to be rich and famous. I just want to live. I want to know what that's like to stand in front of 50,000 people. I want to know what it's like to be on MTV. I want to know. The money was irrelevant to me as opposed to the dream. And I got everything I wished for. I made the deal with the devil because it all came. But I'm not rich yet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So anyway, I started thinking $2.4 billion. And I'm a simple guy. I could make $1 billion and live in a one-bedroom apartment. I could live in a tent. I love camping. I don't crave the mansion. I don't crave that stuff. But I do crave wanting my kids to be proud, and I do crave wanting my kids to have the things they want. And so after seeing that $2.4 billion and realizing I spent 3 months of my life basically going to candle college in my kitchen, I thought to myself,
candle college.
I thought to myself, let me turn this into a small online business, and this will also teach my kids about entrepreneurship, because my kids are both showing signs that they may not want to lead the normal 9-to-5 life as well. It'd blow my mind if one of them comes to me and with a plan to go to college. Let's just put it that way. And
sure.
They're great kids. They aspire to be things. They have dreams just like me. It's just not regular world dreams. And so I thought, let me start an online business and teach my children that if I sell a candle for $24, I didn't make $24.
Right.
You know, so we started the 100%. Online business. We started the online business, and I became obsessed and passionate with the industry, and you know, and I also wanted to. What I thought was neat was that the music industry is so cutthroat, so it's horrible. I'll just be honest with you: the music industry is dirty, nasty, horrible business. And if you find a friend in it, you're really lucky if you find a real friend. But the but you learn things, especially from Gene Simmons. And, you know, Brett, you know, remember Brett won the Celebrity Apprentice. He's a smart business guy. He's kept himself relevant when most people from that genre have disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a 17-year education being this guy's right-hand man. And I've read – and I know all the stuff – you know, Kiss are the incredible marketing kings. And so I started thinking to myself, what if I took everything I know about the music business – and applied it to an industry that won't even see me coming. They'll be like a thief in the night. Think about the candle industry. Yankee Candle alone, $2.4 billion. And they don't have a logo, like the Chevy logo, like the Nike logo. I say this all the time.
Right.
So if you've seen my son, my Shining Soul logo, the sun, in my brain, it's like, I don't care if you even have the candle. I want to be like Nike and Chevy. I want everyone in the country to know that sun, and even if they don't have one of those candles, go, oh, yeah, that's Shining Soul, just like Nike,
yeah,
or just like Chevy, or just like Kiss. You hate Kiss. You know the logo. And the candle industry doesn't have that, so I wanted to create that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so cool.
And it just became passionate. Go ahead.
That's amazing. And so – I want to tell everybody, go to Shining Soul, S-O-L, ShiningSoul.com, and check out the Shining Soul Candle Company on Facebook, facebook.com/ShiningSoulCandleCompany. And so with that, we got about literally 2 minutes left before the end of the show. Is there any last words that you want to give to the listeners? Right now.
You never got to the third question. Ask me the third question.
Oh,
it's the most important.
Yeah, how are you elevating the lives around you?
At this point in my life, it's been like this my whole life, piece by piece, but as I've gotten older, I've realized, and the single most important thing to me, my children first, but everybody I meet, I've accomplished some amazing things. You can call me arrogant, but I'm not stupid. I know what I've done. I want to inspire everybody I know that you can just do it. Anyone I come in contact with, if they ask me, how did you do this? I just did it, and you can just do it. All I want is for people to know that they can do whatever they want to do. Nothing is out of reach. You just do it, especially in the world we live in now. All information is available to you. Anything you want to know, you just ask your phone. Do whatever you want to do in life.
Yep.
That's my message. Just do what you want to do.
I love it. I love it. Pete, this is absolutely an honor to have you on my show. I have enjoyed this so much. Amazing conversation. And I look forward to following you and your work. And I wish you the best. I absolutely wish you the best.
Thank you so much. What a great honor to be with you. And you got me inspired. I don't know what it is, but I'm all pumped up to go do something new now today. So thank you so much, man.
I love it. I love it. Everybody listening right now, go to Shining Soul, S-O-L, Shining Soul Candle Company on Facebook and go to shiningsoul.com. Pick up Pete's book, The Moments That Make Us, on Amazon. As we close the show, I always say live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.